This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Finally enjoying my French vanilla that I picked up this morning. Thank goodness for microwaves is all I can say. Well, MHAs are finally getting down to business after the longest election campaign in the province's history. 2.5 months under the caretaker convention stalled important government decision-making and taxed candidates, many of whom were not prepared for a 10-week campaign. The NDP has long raised serious questions about the legitimacy of the election process, especially after in-person voting was abruptly cancelled after the province moved to alert level 5 and shifted to a mail-in voting process. Well, the party has now filed an application to the Supreme Court asking what the results of the latest provincial election the results of the latest provincial election be thrown out. You know, I have new glasses coming. I got a call when I was on open line, actually, from my optometrist. And a new election called. We'll be speaking with the co-founder of Democracy Watch in just a few minutes' time. But first, we're going to speak with VOCM's Brian Callahan, who has been following the story. Hi, Brian.
Hello, Linda. I am equally having trouble with my eyesight today, and I attribute it to that big ball in the sky that I haven't stopped staring at.
I know. Isn't it glorious?
You're trying to get the most of it before it goes away again.
I almost collapsed when I heard Brian Madore say that just then, that it's coming back. The rain, drizzle, and fog is returning. What is the crux?
I should tell you, we were in court, and the judge noted it himself. He said, the brightness, and it was something happening at the time. The judge said the brightness might have threw us all off for a moment, but so I just thought I might throw that in.
Yeah, so you attended the recount in Kitty-Vitty Signal Hill this morning.
Yeah, so not the recount, but the hearing of the application, the formal hearing of it, and to decide how they're going to do it. So the recount is not, as I mentioned this morning, I think in my first tweet, it's not a fait accompli, of course, unless there's less than 10 votes. And beyond that, when it gets, if anyone wants to challenge it, if they have to make application to the court for a judicial recount, and then it's determined. So, you know, in many cases, it wouldn't necessarily happen with 53 votes, which is the difference in St. John's East Kitty-Vitty. It would be, you know, upsetting. You know, it's a close vote, but as close votes go, 53 wouldn't normally get it. But in these times, Linda, as we all know, and the raft of issues that the NDP has repeatedly cited, and now in formal documents filed at the court, they certainly believe they have a case to warrant a recount. Now it's up for the judge to decide if the recount will go ahead. And the government lawyers, you know, lawyers for Elections NL and Bruce Chalk and staff at Elections NL, are not necessarily saying, yeah, okay, we'd like that to go ahead. I mean, if we remember correctly, the premier has repeatedly said himself that he is confident, and we've asked him directly, he's confident and in the results of the election. He believes they're valid and fair. But with respect to the premier, that's up for the courts to decide.
So what's at the crux of the NDP's argument here when it comes to this court filing they made yesterday?
Well, the one yesterday is separate from the recount filing. So there are two separate applications before the Supreme Court. One has to do with specifically the district of St. John's East Kitty-Vitty and the result there and the application for that to be recounted, for all the ballots to be recounted in a judicial setting, formally done, just to clarify. Now, you almost can believe that they couldn't do that without filing the second one, because the second application is a larger, expanded version of the first, which really looks at the entire election as opposed to just the district. So the points that they make in the application for a recount are somewhat repeated in the larger application, but they go into much greater depth and specifics. And, you know, to be honest, it makes perfect sense that they'd want you'd think that the NDP would almost want a hearing on it, because a hearing gets it public. You know, you can read court documents, you and I, and some of us love to do that and some of us don't. But when you have a witness on a stand in person and they're telling you their story, the effect and the, what we say, the the strength of that evidence is probably going to weigh heavier than, you know, just something written in an application. So the bottom line is the recount is what we dealt with this morning. And so there will be a hearing on May the 10th. And that will decide, that'll be a hearing which the judge would like to see people in person in court. This morning it was just the media, the judge and the clerk, and everybody else was on teleconference. But the judge seems to really want that in person, to happen in person. And both sides will give their cases, their arguments as to why they believe a recount either should happen or in Elections NL case, it appears they want to cross-examine the witnesses that the NDP have and try to discount either the validity of what they're saying or the significance of it.
So that's the recount. As far as this attempt to overturn the election results, the overall election results, what can we expect in terms of timelines?
There is no timeline on that one. As we noticed this morning, I mean, the application for the recount was about seventh or eighth down the list of other cases. And the difficulty that the courts are having still with trying to reschedule matters that have been postponed or put off due to the pandemic, many of the courts are just getting back to some semblance of normal. There are a lot more in-person hearings, but so they're having trouble with the dates for one. And they have to set aside a time to deal with both applications. So the recount application was filed first, so that's the one they're dealing with now. The larger one, taking into question the entire election result, there are no firm dates set for the actual hearing of arguments in that. So that's a different kettle of fish. The recount is different than an application that seeks to throw out all. That'll require early filings, and normally the judge will like to see those a week before it happens. And the way the court dates are going right now, anything that is set could be postponed again. So the only firm date that we should be talking about here right now would be the next step would be May the 10th. And that will be to decide when the judge will hear arguments to decide whether or not a recount is even warranted.
In terms of this bigger process, is it realistic to expect that this particular election result could in fact be overturned and we'll be heading back to the polls anytime soon?
Really great question, Linda. The situation is there's an Elections Act, and the Act spells out, you know, in legislative terms, you know, how things should progress, whether or not, you know, and how an application has to be filed, a challenge to a recount, and all the rest of it. But, you know, again, every person you hear or talk to, whether it's judicial or in legislative terms, they will tell you that so much of this is unprecedented that some of it may not have clearly was never even contemplated when the act was written. And so that alone causes a bit of a dysfunction in the system, or at least throws everybody a bit off course and could end up leaving it up to really subjective determination by the justice, by the judge. You know, specifics that we're hearing of irregularities and different things that happened that the NDP say should cause the election to be voided have never been put before the court before. I mean, there are specific parameters in the Elections Act, but some of these allegations we're hearing, it's probably going to come down to a judge's determination where he decides, was it egregious enough to either A, need a recount, or B, throw out all the election results. And he'll also have to take into consideration the public interest, the public good, and whether or not it's in the public interest for all of us to have to go back to polls again. I mean, the application by the NDP asks for it to be overthrown or thrown out immediately. Sorry, I'm taking your words now. But to be thrown out immediately and in a new election called immediately. So I don't think that's realistic, but stranger things have happened.
Brian Callahan, thank you.
You're welcome, Linda. Anytime.
That's VOCM's Brian Callahan with it's a complicated process. We've got two processes underway. One is the recount in Signal Hill, Kitty Vitty, and the other one is the NDP's attempt to have the results of the general election overturned. And to talk a little bit more about that, we have Duff Conacher, the co-founder of Democracy Watch. We'll be with him immediately following the break. Stay tuned.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. You just heard from Brian Callahan, who is one of our reporters here, giving us a little update on two of the separate processes underway challenging the election results in the last provincial election, one of them specific to the district of Signal Hill, Kitty Vitty, and the other one, the overall results province-wide. And here on the line with me now is the co-founder of Democracy Watch, Duff Conacher. Hello, Duff.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So are you surprised to hear that these types of challenges have been launched in light of our last provincial election?
No, I'm not. But just to clarify, the judicial recount, not surprising at all, given it was a 53-vote margin. You usually see applications for judicial recount in those kind of situations across Canada, because it's a pretty close margin. But the second application is not challenging the entire provincial election. It is only challenging the result in that same district where the application for a judicial recount has been made.
No.
It could set a precedent if that was won to challenge results across the province, but it is only focused on the one district. So just to clarify that in terms of what Brian said, the news release from the NDP, the initial reports kind of made it seem like it was challenging the entire provincial election. That would be a huge case. It's focused on issues that happened across the province, but it is only focused on overturning the result in the same district where the NDP leader lost.
Knowing what you know about the election process here, is there merit to challenging those election results?
There is, but the difficulty is that the margins of the candidates that won, the margins that they won by in several of the districts, would mean that even the problems caused by all sorts of blunders by the chief electoral officer and the overall big mistake by Premier Fury in calling the election, that it would be really difficult for a judge to look at the situation and say, oh, well, this candidate won by thousands of votes, but these problems with the election would have meant they would have lost if the election was held during a time where everyone could vote easily in person. And to put a judge in that position across the province, it's just going to be really difficult to prove that case. But in districts where the vote margin was for the winner was very small, as in this district, only 53 votes, I think the problems amount to enough evidence to show that lots of voters were likely denied the right to vote. And as a result, the election was unfair and should be reheld. So there's not enough ridings across the province, I don't think, to change the election results overall. There'd have to be enough of them that were close enough where this same kind of evidence could be brought to force a by-election that may go another way if it is held. It's just a really difficult position to put judges in after the fact, after thousands of people did vote, even though the voter turnout was a record low. Thousands of people did vote, but you do have an election result, and now you're asking a judge to overturn it. You need a lot of evidence to that clearly shows an unfair election before any judge is going to do that.
So it's a difficult case, no doubt, and it has ramifications that... Do you think it might have the potential, if successful in Signal Hill, Kitty Vitty, to launch further challenges or upset the results across the province?
Definitely to launch other challenges in other close ridings. Would it change things? No one can say until after by-elections would be held in those ridings in terms of whether it would overall change the seat count for each of the parties. It was a close result, obviously, overall. And because they only, the Liberals only won 22 seats and 21 are needed for a majority. So you just have a couple of seats flip and they're into a minority situation. And so it just remains to be seen what the judge does with this first case about this one district. But I think there's enough there to certainly say that a judge should rule that there should be a by-election in that district, because the problems are quite extensive in terms of voters being denied the right to vote. And that's a fundamental charter right that must be upheld. And it's really, really important that it be upheld and that we just don't roll over and say, oh, but we had a vote. And yeah, I know the voter turnout was the lowest ever. And there are all these problems. Well, we're just going to go by it and not hold a fair election. So as a result, I think you could see in a few other close ridings that this could set a precedent and possibly result in by-elections that will result in a different government.
Are there any difficulties that could ensue? I'm thinking specifically in that district now, if a judge deems that a by-election is warranted. I mean, do you start from scratch? Do you start from the same candidates? You know, how different will it be?
Well, under election laws, the by-elections have the same kind of periods where people can register as candidates. So you may end up with different candidates for the parties. You may end up with more candidates because it was essentially a snap election call. And there may have been people who wanted to run as independents who didn't really have a chance, especially given the difficulties of filing forms and everything due to COVID to actually get in there. It could end up being a different slate of candidates in the election. And obviously a different result is possible as well.
Have we seen a situation where election results have been overturned or a by-election called through a judicial process before?
Well, you get recounts all the time, and there have been situations where some sort of fraud happened, either explicit or enough unfairness. In several elections through Canadian history at a district level, not an overall provincial election, though, being overthrown. We haven't seen that. But if you look at the results, which are still preliminary, not full results, for the election in Newfoundland and Labrador, the margin of victory in a few ridings, I see in the list, riding one, by 70 votes, 60 votes, another one 65, a few others in the low hundreds. So there's several ridings that were quite close, and that's why this case is quite important, because it could set a precedent that would allow those other very close result ridings to proceed with cases that also could end up having the results overturned in those ridings. So there's many, many ridings across the province that were quite close in the results. And as a result, it makes this case very important in terms of what could happen across the province. As I said, I think there is enough there. There was enough unfairness, enough people effectively denied the right to vote because of all of the problems with the mail-in ballot system and the changing deadlines and all the mistakes that the chief electoral officer made in setting the deadlines for mail-in ballots and changing them. The due diligence, the overall competence in that whole process, I think amounts to enough to say that a lot of voters were thwarted in their right to vote. And as a result, you didn't have a legitimate election.
My guest today on Target is the co-founder of Democracy Watch, Duff Conacher. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today is Duff Conacher, the co-founder of Democracy Watch. We've reached him in Ontario, where they're in another lockdown situation. Duff, it seems to me every time we've spoken recently, you guys have been in lockdown, unfortunately. And it sort of ties into the conversation that we're having right now in terms of this particular election campaign here in Newfoundland and Labrador. What specifically were the difficulties encountered here during this election?
Well, essentially, that an outbreak occurred after the election was called, and that made in-person voting quite dangerous. And so the switch was to mail-in ballots. That was the initial decision, and then the deadlines for applying for those and then filing them and getting them back to the election agency were changed a few times. Initially, in-person voting was going to go ahead in a few parts of the province and mail-in ballots in other parts. Just multiple changes of decisions and no clear plan and lots of unfairness as a result, especially in terms of the deadlines changing multiple times and the initial deadlines being very, very short periods of time for people to register and get in a mail-in ballot. Other things raised by the application, which haven't been proven in court yet, this application by the NDP leader and a voter in the riding challenging the results in her riding are that there were people who were able to register for mail-in ballots without even proving where they lived and who they were, as is required. As well, that the information was not made available in all languages, including Indigenous languages, making it more difficult for people who speak those languages to vote. And mainly, though, just these overall changes and timeline changes that resulted in overall unfairness in terms of people being able to exercise their right to vote.
So is the onus then here on the premier for calling the election when he did, when it clearly was apparent that we weren't prepared for these possibilities?
Yes. I think it was a mistake. He could have waited longer. He had until August to call the election. That could have even been extended if through agreement through the legislature, and there would be no reason for the opposition parties to disagree with that extension. All would be wanting to have a safe vote that was fair and allowed people to vote in person. And that was the big mistake. It put the chief electoral officer in a bad position because he was not given a lot of notice and had to make enormous adjustments, sometimes with unclear powers in terms of the legislature, whether he had the power to make the decisions. And that's part of what's being challenged in the application that's been filed in court by the NDP. And unfortunately, I think he blundered in making some of those decisions, most especially not checking just how long it could take some people to register for a mail-in ballot if they didn't have access to a computer or even a phone, and also get that ballot marked and back through the mail, through Canada Post back or some other way back to the election agency. And that was his biggest mistake, was not realizing people would need a lot more time to do that. And all you need is some people needing a lot more time to do that for it to be a blunder, because the right to vote is supposed to be fair for everyone and accessible to everybody. So he should have taken into account just how difficult it would be for some people in the province to do that before he set the initial deadlines.
There seemed to be a lot of confusion, too, about whether or not the election could have been postponed. It seems to me that Elections NL's hand was forced in many ways when elections employees simply started saying, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to be working during this particular election campaign in the midst of this pandemic. Things had really started to ramp up just prior to Alert Level 5 being called, which is the most stringent restrictions we have here in Newfoundland and Labrador when it comes to COVID-19. And really, it seemed like nobody seemed to know whose jurisdiction was what in making those kinds of calls. Is that what led to some of these problems as well?
Yes. The law doesn't, and most of the laws across the country don't really anticipate these kind of situations. Not surprisingly, because the laws have been passed, amended, and updated since we last had a nationwide pandemic, which was the Spanish flu back just about 100 years ago. So people didn't anticipate these kind of situations that might cause for an election to be suspended completely and then restarted at a later date, and all the rules that you would need around that, because, you know, candidates started campaigning, spending money they might have raised, same with the parties. So do they get that money back? How do you make it fair for those who might wanted to run, didn't run? How do you do the nominations all over again? So it's not surprising that that was not anticipated in the law. It's not there in the law across the country. Right now there's a bill at the federal level to make some changes that will make it possible for Elections Canada to run a federal election during a pandemic, including having ballots all by mail-in ballots. And those changes have to be made to make it effectively legal. Those legal changes were not made to the law in Newfoundland and Labrador before the premier called the snap election. And that's in part why it was such a bad mistake for him to call that snap election and not wait longer until vaccination levels were higher and experts were saying that it would be safe and there'd be no chance of an outbreak that would cause these kind of problems. So again, it was the premier's big mistake. Unfortunately, the chief electoral officer, I think, also made other mistakes. It's amounted to a lot of unfairness. And now you have judges in this bad position of trying to look at an election after the fact and decide whether it should be invalidated and by elections held or an overall new provincial election held, depending on how far things go in the courts with this initial application and possible following applications.
So what kind of options did Bruce Chalk have, or was he able to exercise once that writ was dropped?
Well, it's unclear, and it's part of the court application and was raised by people even during the time period when these first changes were made, was does he actually have the clear authority to make the changes that he made? And any law is just vague words on paper. And they're vague in general because usually laws apply to lots of different situations in the future. So they're left a bit general or vague so that there's some flexibility. But the flexibility can't go so far that someone exceeds their powers. And it just remains for the court to decide whether there was any overreach of exercise of power by the chief electoral officer in making the decisions that he made to adjust things after the COVID outbreak happened. So we don't really know. Laws are just really vague words on paper until the Supreme Court of Canada says this is what these words mean. And there's lots of laws out there where everyone's kind of agreeing this is how it works and everyone agrees this is the way. And if someone comes along and challenges it, sometimes you find out, oh, everyone agreed, but the Supreme Court disagrees. And actually, this was what the rule was all this time. And these what the powers were that enforcement agencies had all this time. So that's the state of law across Canada until you get the court's ruling on it, whether it's a lower court ruling and the Supreme Court refuses to hear an appeal, or whether it actually goes up to the Supreme Court and they finally rule and say this is what the law means and the powers that people have under it. So it all remains to be seen. It's just a debate now about whether the chief electoral officer actually exercised his powers properly and legally during the election.
Was there another route that could have been taken to address some of these serious issues without having to take it to court, or was that the only course to take?
It's really the only way to go forward. Election happened. The vote has been counted, certified by the election agency, and as you mentioned, the government is up and running again. The legislature will be up and running again, and that's all based on this election result. There's no way to have that changed and all those decisions made that were made changed except for a court to order it.
My guest today on Target is the co-founder of Democracy Watch. We've reached him in Ottawa. Steph Conacher will be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And my guest today on Target is the co-founder of Democracy Watch. We've been talking about this particular provincial election. And Duff, are there lessons to be learned for other provinces here?
Definitely. Don't hold an election during a pandemic. BC and New Brunswick got away with it, and Saskatchewan in the fall. They were very lucky, all of them, because they had outbreaks, all of them, soon after the election was finished. And those outbreaks could have easily occurred during the election campaign period. The Yukon just held an election as well. But the fact that they have been lucky, these jurisdictions, to hold elections without outbreaks should not, especially now with the new variants that are, according to all experts, much more contagious. Those four jurisdictions that have held an election without an outbreak should not be viewed as the way to go, because what is much more likely, according to all experts, is that an outbreak would happen and would cause all the same unfair problems and the big mess that was the election in Newfoundland and Labrador, and we shouldn't have a federal election or elections anywhere else until experts say it's safe to do so, which is likely not going to be until next year, given where things are going with vaccination rates and the fact that kids likely won't be even vaccinated for another whole year, given that they haven't even tested the vaccine one company is just beginning to test the vaccine on kids under the age of 16. So, it's just a bad idea. It's
so what kind of an impact?
A lot of unfairness.
What kind of an impact, though, does that have on democracy? Or is it better to have that, remove that uncertainty and just keep a government in place to manage all of that?
Well, we don't have fixed election dates in any other province or at the federal level during 2021. So elections, to be really fair, should be held on fixed election dates. That's why most of the provinces and the federal government have fixed election dates for every 4 years on a set date. That makes it fair for parties and people who want to run as candidates and volunteer, because they can all plan their lives. And you don't have snap elections called, as in BC and New Brunswick, and by the Newfoundland premier at a time where it looks like it will help them win. All three of them were in minority government situations and wanted a majority, so they'd have that almost absolute majority power that you get in our Canadian system. And that's why they all cynically and unethically and in New Brunswick and in BC, in violation of the fixed election date law, called their snap elections, even though it was during a pandemic. So everyone else should just wait for the fixed election date and not try and take advantage of whatever bump they may have in the polls based on throwing a lot of money at a lot of voters to deal with the COVID crisis. And hopefully they will do that, so we will have fair elections through the rest of the country and at the federal level, instead of these unfair snap elections that are very dangerous right now for voters and the health of people and the health of our elections.
Given the current situation in Newfoundland and Labrador, can a democracy continue to function with any degree of public confidence with these kinds of questions hanging over it?
Well, when you have 50% voter turnout and as a result just cut in half the total popular vote support that the government actually got, and it ends up that, you know, you have the government in Newfoundland and Labrador really only has the support of about 20 to 25% of voters in the province. That's pretty small number of voters who actually support you. Doesn't make you a very legitimate government. That's a comment on our voting system, that you're, a party is even able to win a majority with such a low voter support. Our system should be made more proportional. Canada belongs to an international association of parliaments that has studied systems and says a proportional voting system is much more fair, results in better government as well. And we belong to that association that has reached that conclusion. Beyond that, if you're calling an election where you have this kind of outbreak and change in the voting system and it results in a lot of people being denied their right to vote and you end up with a very low voter turnout, well, then as a government, you should really be questioning your own legitimacy. And you better be acting in a way that takes into account the views of opposition parties, because you really don't have a lot of support of voters in the province. And you shouldn't be acting like you somehow have a majority mandate and to do a bunch of things that you want to do without talking to anybody or consulting or taking into account their views, because you don't. We see this, though, even in regular elections. We've had very low voter turnouts for the past 20 years in elections across Canada, where governments get majorities based on very, very low voter turnout, very low actual popular support. Usually 20 to 25% in many of these elections is the total number of voters that actually support the party in power. And yet you see those parties again and again act like the majority support everything they do and everything they want to do. And beyond that, breaking a lot of their promises and doing things that they never even talked about doing in the election. This has to stop. Politicians don't really care if 10% of people voted as long as they got enough to win. I think most politicians across Canada would say, look at me, I have this power, and it's granted to me with the blessing of all the voters, because that's how they always spin it. But you look at the polls, and about 10% of Canadians trust governments. And the reason why is because of all these broken promises and these false mandates and these false majorities and premiers and prime ministers acting like they have absolute power, when in fact they have very little legitimacy in the eyes of most voters.
Could the election have been postponed? Is there a mechanism in the Elections Act that can determine, that now was clearly not the right time, we'll put this on pause and we'll come back to it at another time, and government can continue on as if it was normal?
No, from my understanding. But the Premier Fury had until August to call the election. And at the time he called it, the Prime Minister had announced the target was September to have mass vaccinations across the country. So if it turned out that that target was not met and that more variants in COVID were showing up and they were more serious and more dangerous, I'm quite sure that all the parties in Newfoundland and Labrador could have and would have cooperated to extend that election date. After all, it was only an election date extended in terms of when you have a change in the premier in between elections, when that new premier, who was not elected except by his party, would have to go to the voters to get a new mandate. And it's not like it's suspending the next election entirely that was already on the regular schedule for Newfoundland and Labrador to have an election. So I think all the parties probably would have cooperated and extended the deadline if it was needed in order to have a safe election. So it was the big mistake of the premier was calling the snap election in the self-interest of his party at a time when they were riding high in the polls. And he got his majority. Very, very slim, about as slim as possible, both in terms of popular vote. He doesn't have a majority popular vote at all. And in terms of seats, what can I say? I don't think that makes him a legitimate premier, not democratically legitimate anyway.
This is the first time in living memory we've been through this kind of a scenario, this kind of pandemic situation. Have we seen an impact on democracy caused by these types of crisis situations in the past?
Oh yeah, very, very much so. In terms of any kind of crisis situation, you often see the government's attempting to change the rules and essentially act illegitimately and do power grabs. We saw the Trudeau government do this early in the pandemic. They tried to introduce a bill that would have given them power for 2 years to introduce any bill they wanted and any budget they wanted, and not and be able to act on it without Parliament even approving it. And they actually attempted that. They wanted it. One of their initial bills was we'll be allowed to spend anything we want, any amount we want, and change any law we want without Parliament voting on it. So that's the kind of thing you see, unfortunately, in these kind of situations. And we've seen it across the country with provincial governments as well, doing power grabs and trying to slip things through because the media is very focused on stories about COVID. And it's very unfortunate, but it shows you the attitude of many of the people in power across the country right now. They want that power without accountability. And when there's a situation that is taking up a lot of public debate and media coverage space, they will try and slip things through to give themselves more power and less accountability.
Just under 2 minutes left, Duff. What are your final thoughts on this?
Well, it's going to be a very interesting case to watch. Because it is so unprecedented in terms of these issues, and it's putting a judge in a very difficult position. But again, I think when you look at the overall evidence of what happened and the number of people who had problems voting and the voter turnout overall, which reflects that, that obviously there were higher barriers than usual because it's a very, very low voter turnout overall. That I think it's enough there for a judge to say in that district where the voter turnout was so close, or the vote margin was so close, just 53 votes, that it wasn't a fair vote. It denied voters' rights to vote, violated the Charter of Rights as a result, and that a new election should be held in that riding. And as I mentioned, there's several ridings that were equally close or even closer in terms of the vote results in this election. And so that could lead to many more lawsuits by other candidates and voters in those ridings that could have a significant impact on the makeup of the legislature after if they win all those cases and by-elections are held in all of those ridings.
No doubt we'll be watching this for some time to come. Duff Conacher, co-founder of Democracy Watch in Ottawa, thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you for your interest.
And we'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Do join us then. Thanks for listening.